Good morning. It is March 17th, 2024. This is episode 109 of the Paul Green Comedy Podcast, a podcast by a dreamer for dreamers out there. Stand-up comedian, actor, and improviser Paul Green coming to you. Although this is my 109th episode, this is actually only the second episode with my brand new sign, which was created and designed by my good friend Alejandra down in Mexico City. She helped me design it along with a friend of hers named Omar. So they designed my logo, and then they converted my logo into this neon sign, and I think it is badass. Forgive my language. But the day that it arrived was a week ago, and then I hit the road, and I love this sign so much, I almost thought of bringing it with me to San Diego and Los Angeles and driving around with it so that when I did these podcasts on the road, as I am apt to do, that I could still use the sign. But I didn't want it to break. You know, this plastic is not super durable. And I've only been back for a few days, and I have not figured out how to hang it yet either. I have some ideas. I bought some stuff from Lowe's to try to hang it, but I have not had the gumption to give that a shot because I have been performing all weekend. I did 4 shows this weekend at JP's Comedy Club in Gilbert, which is pretty much my home club. I consider it because I get to do 4 or 5 shows there a month. When I'm not out of town, it's 5 shows. And this weekend's shows were a little interesting. I'm a little rusty because the last show I had done was that show in San Diego a week ago. But that show, I totally riffed. It was 100% improvised. It was at this karate or martial arts dojo, and there was just enough stuff for me to riff about in the dojo that I never got to material. And it was the type of thing to where I started to generate like my own callbacks, sort of my own shared knowledge with the audience. So then as I kept progressing, I was then able to like start calling back things I had done earlier, and it's really fun. It's really fun to craft a set that way, to just go in there and just start calling out what you see and just making jokes with whatever comes to mind. And, you know, I want to try to figure out how to make my written material feel that way. And man, it's not easy. I'm trying to see if there, you know, like if I need to write differently, if I need to write in a different energy. There's just such a different cadence when I'm riffing and being spontaneous than when I'm delivering material that I've written. And I don't know, I'm starting to just now experiment with, Can I write in a way that makes it feel when I'm presenting it that it is a spontaneous riff? And, you know, so the audience would have no idea. They would have no idea the difference between when I'm riffing and when I'm in material. Because right now, there's a pretty clear difference from when I'm riffing and when I'm doing material. And, you know, I don't riff. I mean, I do sort of go off script. You know, I'll call out what's going on in the room or whatever. You know, it's rare for me to do what I did last Saturday and just improvise a whole bunch of material. I mean, like literally improvise the whole set. So that's something I've been thinking about this weekend. During my 4 shows, I tried all new material, didn't really repeat any joke. I even brought back this bit that I used to do when I first started doing comedy, but I sort of let it go. It wasn't quite working. And so I brought that. I tried doing that a couple times this weekend. The first time I tried it, it didn't really go great. Second time I tried it, I found a couple of other ways to present it, which I think went a little bit better. But it's still missing something. Actually, a lot of the material I did this weekend is still missing something. Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bombing, but it you know, it was, you know, we had very generous audiences, I'll put it that way. And so in front of a generous audience that wants to laugh, most of it did pretty well. Some of it did okay. I had a few swing and misses, but again, the audiences were very generous and I was funny enough. It's not like I was bombing and the audience hated me. So even when I had a couple of those swing and misses, I was able to, you know, just sort of call it out and move on, go to the next bit. But yeah, I am trying to write a bunch of new stuff. I want to see if I can get another tight 15 to 20 minutes maybe this year. Add that on to some of the stuff I was doing last year. I didn't write a ton of new stuff last year. I wrote maybe about 7 or 8 minutes of, maybe closer to 10. And that stuff I'm already sort of bored with. And so I'm now trying to find out what's next, what's interesting to me, what's landing with audiences, what do I really want to dive into. And what's interesting is I'm actually going the opposite direction I thought I would be. Last year, I got a lot more real. I got a lot more honest about my life, and I was telling very true experiences, which are a little heavy. You know, I talk about, you know, a relationship I was in. I talk about calling the suicide hotline, which is all a true story. I talk about going to therapy. So the subject matter is a little heavy, but I was being a lot more transparent and a lot more vulnerable, which of course that's what you always hear. Oh, you got to be vulnerable. You got to tell the truth. You know, you got to be authentic and all of that stuff. And I really was, and it was working pretty well. Like I was enjoying that material. Now I'm getting into a place to where I want to be a little, I'm just trying to be a little more, observational, a little more light, but yeah, just trying to find the funny in the everyday things. You know, I've been trying out this material about being addicted to a cell phone and about how there's so many ads on YouTube and now there's ads on Netflix and talking about Spirit Airlines, right? Like every stand-up comedian has a bit about Spirit Airlines, and I'm going, well, what would be my take on Spirit Airlines? How can I talk about that, these more sort of, you know, benign sort of everyday topics, and just having an opinion on them and trying to find the jokes within my opinion and just keeping it light and fun for the audience. And it's also light and fun for me. You know, I'm not having to like open up a vein up there and try to be, you know, all deep and real and dark and all of that stuff. So, you know, it was fun. I had a great time at all four shows. All four shows again went pretty well. You know, I wasn't killing. I wasn't slaying the room. There were other comics on the shows who did much better, but it's not like I did bad. So I don't know. I'm just that's just where I'm at in my stand-up comedy journey and trying to evolve and as an artist. And and I will say, I am really putting a lot of thought. It's in my mind a lot about, yeah, but how do I actually make it? Because, you know, that's the big question mark. And again, I talked about this before, but I have just met so many comics who have been in the game longer than me and more effectively than me, effectively meaning they've had really cool breaks and experiences and have hit milestones that I haven't even hit. And, you know, they hit all those milestones when they were much younger than me. And so it's just all that head trash. It's just all that whatever my dream is, it's not feasible because of X, Y, and Z. And so it requires more more willpower, again, when confronted with contrary evidence, like, you know, comedians who have been in the game longer than me, are older than me, but have been in, again, been in it much longer, have had incredible experiences, and even they haven't, quote unquote, made it, and yet they're still out doing what I'm doing, which is pursuing the dream and trying to find a way to make it work. And, you know, and it's challenging because I think every comedian more or less wants the same thing, which is at least the capacity to have a fan base significant enough to really be successful, to make a living, make a career, make a life out of stand-up comedy. And the more that I'm in this game, the more that I realize actually how tremendously rare that is. And so it's difficult to continue to pursue the dream with passion and enthusiasm when the reality of the statistical probability of massive success seems so small. And then, of course, you know, we have to look around and say, well, who has made it and why? And then, you know, looking at the comics who are blowing up right now, who are becoming very successful or getting big followings, and then having to go like, okay, well, but why that person? Because, you know, then it's so easy to judge. It's so easy, you know, to be bitter and be like, well, you know, they're just following him because blah, 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 or they're just following her because she's really attractive, or they're just, you know, whatever it is. And I try not to think that way because that doesn't help me at all. All that is doing is just adding more negative evidence and creating negative energy around my belief in something happening for me, something huge and something positive that puts me in a situation to have that level of success, to literally live what my dream is. So that's just what I'm dealing with. And I think what any dreamer deals with. And I was texting a friend about it tonight, and she said, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to listen to yourself. If it's time to quit, it's not in your heart anymore, then you'll know. But if there's still something in you that is driving you and speaking to you and resonating with you to stay in this game, then you owe it to yourself to do it, and you have to ignore everything else. And that resonated with me, and I appreciated that because that is so true. And I have found myself more and more, especially in these last couple of years, becoming far more concerned and far more interested and far more trusting of my own inner voice, and really just learning to hone in to myself and my connection to the divine, who or whatever that is, and trying my best to drown out any other influence that I know is not actually any influence that I don't actually feel has my best interest in mind. And it's kind of a sobering thought to just be like, well, why would anybody give me advice? Or why would anybody try to influence me one way or another, if it does not in some way benefit them first, or maybe not first, but benefit them either directly or indirectly. And so, you know, I'm not trying to be all cynical, because I have many people in my life who I feel are genuinely altruistic in their desire to help and support me. And I'm very grateful for that. And I think it's just a matter of also acknowledging that there are going to be people in our lives whose intentions are not for our own individual best interest. Their influence is trying to benefit them, and maybe even try to benefit them at the expense of what's in your best interest. And that's just something that I've witnessed, I've experienced recently, and it's just something to be aware of. And I really try not to be cynical, because I don't think cynicism helps. So, or bitter or whiny, or, you know, we were talking tonight in the green room with the other comics about how common it is for stand-up comedians to go into Facebook communities, like comedian and comic Facebook communities, and complain about bookers, and to complain about clubs, and to complain about, oh, we should get paid more, and blah, 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 blah. And I mean, and fair enough, but I'm just sitting there going, has that ever gotten a comic paid? Has there ever been a booker who's like, oh, you know, that comic complained about me in a Facebook group, maybe I should call them up and give them some more money? If anything, that booker is going to go, oh, I'm never booking that comic again. I mean, it's a sad reality, but the reality is comedy is a incredibly saturated industry. There are probably 10x more comics for every decent comedy stage in the world. I mean, if there is a comedy spot that pays, has a good audience, the number of those types of shows and those types of comedy spots is drastically outweighed, drastically, probably 100x, maybe even 1,000x of comics who would be willing to take that spot. Now maybe they aren't really the best fit for it, or maybe they aren't funny enough for it, but there are plenty of comics who think they're funnier than they really are. And if a booker said, hey, I've got this spot at my club on a Friday night, it pays $200, it pays $300, it pays $100. So many comics, if they had the opportunity, would take that gig, whether they're prepared for it or not. And if they're not prepared for it, then they would just get up there and be as funny as they possibly can. And the crowd would go like, oh, that person wasn't very funny. And, you know, I've probably been that comic, you know, sometime in my career, maybe a few times, where, you know, I was the comic who got the spot on the show that maybe I wasn't quite up to par for. And unfortunately, an audience had to sit through maybe who wasn't the funniest comic who could have done that spot, or who would have been happy to do that spot, but for whatever reason, I got it. So it's just fascinating to me, though, how much comics complain. And I do realize the irony that I'm also complaining now about comics who complain. So here we go. But this just all circles around to, you know, the reality that it is a saturated industry, and to set yourself apart from the crowd and the other 10,000 comics within 100-mile radius of me, or however many there are. I don't know. I mean, if you include LA, there's probably, I mean, there's thousands and thousands of people who have bestowed upon themselves the title of comedian. And so, again, trying to find a way to really make that work, and to become so undeniable in your comedy that there's an audience who wants to pay to see you. And that's the missing link. That is the Holy Grail, at least as far as I'm concerned. And that's not to say that there aren't comics out there who, you know, maybe don't have a draw, who maybe aren't famous, who have found a way to make a living at it, either through, you know, like very rigorous cruise ship tours or casino tours or military tours or, you know, whatever. But that's not my dream. That's not what I'm going for. And so I'm constantly having to think much bigger than my present reality, which then it gets hard to determine how much I am dreaming and how much I'm being ambitious and how much I'm just a psycho, loony, delusional person. And who knows, maybe I'm a little bit of both. But like my friend said, you have to listen to that inner voice, and there is something inside me that just keeps me on this path, just keeps me on the path. And then, you know, I'll have shows like I had a week ago where I just have the most incredible euphoric experience. And even the shows this weekend, even though I was trying all new material, and so it wasn't like I was in the zone, you know, and I was only doing 10 or 12 minute sets, you know, and it wasn't like even in that whole 10 minutes wasn't all grand slams, you know. I had a couple of dips and whatever, and again, I'm working out new material. That's part of the process. But I don't know why I'm on this path. You know, I can speculate that it was my choice, but there's another element that just feels something beyond me had a huge influence on me being on this path, because it doesn't make any sense logically to do this. it's just not a thoroughly thought out business plan. But man, when it's happening, and when I'm in that zone and I feel free up there, and I'm connected with the audience, and it's just me and a microphone, and I'm feeling it, there really is something just beyond euphoric. And I still have something in me that is compelling me forward, and that gives me hope that there is something very significant on the horizon for me if I can just stay in it, trust that inner voice, like my friend said, and be open to whatever happens with that. So that is where I'm at on a Sunday morning, March 17th. I believe it's St. Paddy's Day. And I hope all of you are doing well, that you are finding the courage to follow your inner voice and to move forward with your dreams, even despite evidence to the contrary. And hey, you know, if your inner voice says, hey, this is probably, you probably just don't have this in you anymore, maybe it's time to find a new dream that speaks to you, I say, hey, go for that. I don't view that as a failure. I view that as a pivot, and we all have to make pivots in life. I'm just at a stage in my life where it's kind of the opposite. Like intellectually, I'm just going, yeah, I don't see how this could possibly work out for a guy like me. But that inner voice is going, stay in it. Stay in it. So that's where I'm at on episode 109 of the Paul Green Comedy Podcast. And I love all of you so much. I hope your dreams are going well, and I hope you're finding joy in your journey, and I will chat with you all tomorrow.